We're holding on Dalet Omid Bey's second line from the bottom. We learned yesterday in the Mishnah. So first of all, we learned about the concept that a person, that many people who bring machs a shekel are chayev in a kolboin, which we said was a small extra surcharge, 1/12 of the machs a shekel according to the mayor, 1/24 of it according to the other chachamim. We discussed various reasons why. According to the mayor, it's daraisa. And the reason is because the shekel, the machs a shekel that you give might be a little bit underweight, or it might not be of the same purity as the coin of fire that Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu. According to the Chachamim, it's derabanan, and there were various ideas behind it. One of them being, again, it might also have to do with the fact that the coin might be a tiny bit underweight, the machs a shekel that you give, but it could also be, we said, because it's a fee for the money changer, because he's sitting over there exchanging money for you, and according to many opinions, also collecting the actual machs a shekel, so that would be another reason for you to have to give a kolbon. Another reason is in order to make up for the fact that at this time of year, machs a shekels are more in demand than other kind of coins, so that pushes up the value of them. Anyway, we mentioned in the Mishnah that you have like this. We said you have a case of brothers who inherited their father's property, then and split it up among themselves. Then they decided to join back together in a partnership. So then we said, depending on the circumstances, they may be chayev in kolbon and potter from Maisa Behema, or the other way around. Because we said the story was that if they divided up the estate and then they joined back together in a partnership, so then they will be chayev and kolboin, because each one individually is giving their machs a shekel from what was their inheritance, and the fact that they joined back together in a partnership doesn't change that. On the other hand, the animals that are owned by their partnership are potter from Maisa Behema, and therefore they'll be potter in that case. On the other hand, if they decide not to divide up the inheritance, but to begin with to keep it as if it was their father's, as if their father was still alive and it's still all under one ownership, then it's the other way around. They're potter from kolbon, because then in effect it's as if their father is giving Maisa Shein and is giving Machs a Shekel on their behalf, and they're chayev in Maisa Behema because it's as if he owns all the end. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yirmiyah says that Rabbi Yirmiyah asked a question. Why are we saying there's only those two cases? It's either the Chayev and Maisa Behema and Potter from Kolboin, or the other way around. He says, V'lama les nan amrin. Why don't we say, Pa'amim shein chayoven bezeo bezeo? Sometimes it can be a case where they're chayev in both Maisa Behema and Kolboin, or Pa'amim shein p'turim mizeo mizeo. And there can be cases where they're potter from both of them. No? Hey chavida. So how does that work out? What are the scenarios? The part in parenthesis over here is not really the correct gerusa. All the mafoshim over here take it out. So we'll skip the part in parenthesis and go on beyond that. Or the part outside the parenthesis also goes according to the way the Bavli has the same sugya in Masechta Bechoras, and it has the same thing over there. So they have the cases like this, Rabbi Yirmiyah says. Choko an achosim b'le choko abehema. Suppose that the brothers divided up the other nechassim, the other property that they inherited from their father, v'loy chokwa behema, but they didn't divide up the animals, chayavin bezeh bezeh. Then they're going to be chayav in both, because once they divided up the other property, then they're chayav in kolbon, because each one is giving their own master shekel, and as usual, when you give your own master shekel, you're chayav in kolbon. On the other hand, they didn't divide up the animals, so the animals are still considered to be their father's, and therefore they're chayav in maisa behema. And vice versa. On the other hand, if they divided up the animals and did not divide up the rest of the property, then they're potter from each other. Because then you have the opposite. They divided up the animals and then they rejoined in a partnership. So that therefore the animals are considered like animals that they bought. And therefore they're partners and therefore they're potter from Maisa Behema. On the other hand, their father is still considered to be giving Machs a Shekel on their behalf. Therefore, they're chayev in that. And therefore, they're potter from that. So Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying, why is the Mishnah mentioning only two cases when in fact there should be four? In the Bavli, actually, in Bechoros, the Gemara explains over there that Rabbi Yirmi is not just mentioning that for curiosity's sake. He actually has a certain chiddush in that last part. That we would have thought, if they divided up the animals, but they didn't yet divide up the nechasim, why should we go so lakula as to pater them from both of them? Shouldn't we say, once they divided up the animals, obviously they do intend eventually to split up the whole inheritance, and therefore we should already be mechay of them in korban. So, and therefore, Rabbi Yirmiyah is telling us that nevertheless, we don't have to worry about that, and in fact, they are pater from korban until they do actually split up the nechasim. Okay, so Rabbi Yirmiyah is asking, it's a question, but he's phrasing it as a question, but he's saying the truth is the Mishnah could have mentioned that there are four possible cases, not just two. It's not just a blanket statement that every time they're Chayev and Kolben, they're Potter from Maisa Behema, and vice versa, there are actually cases that you could construct where they're Potter from both or Chayev for both. Okay. Amr of Mana. But Rav Mana says in that connection, Hadoda at Omar, now that would only apply, this that Rav Yirmiyah is saying, that you can have, that they divide up only one, and then they're chayev in both, or they divide up only one, and therefore their potter for both, would only be, Hadoda at Omar, b'shaloi hoisa behema roi, only if the animals didn't constitute a majority of the Yerusha. But if the animals are the majority of the inheritance, then we say that is considered the ikker of the nechosim. Which means, in other words, so actually the Tiklin Chadatin says that this statement of Rav Mana's is referring specifically to Rabbi Yirmiyah's first case, where he says if they divided up the nechosim, but not the animals, then we say they're chayev in both. So Rabbi Mana is saying they would only be chayev in kolbein only if the animals were not worth more than the other nechosim. But if the animals constituted a majority of the nechosim, even though they only split up the animals, nevertheless, we would still say that they're potter from kolbein because we go according to the roiv. Rab Ovin Amar, Rab Shammai Boy, next, Rab Ovin says that Rab Shammai asked the question, why are we saying, we're going back to the Mishnah, we're saying that if they don't divide up the inheritance at all, then they're potter from Kolbein. What's the logic, asked Rab Shammai? The Pnesha Asisan Ka'odam Echad Eitz Maisa Behema, just because you consider them to be as if they were one person relative to Maisa Behema, because they didn't divide up the Nechosim, because of that, at Potrim in a Kolbein, because of that, you're going to patter him from the Kolbein. What's the logic? What's the logic? The fact is they are two separate people. So actually the Korban Eidah says that Rav Shammai's question is actually a continuation of Rav Mana's statement. He's going according to Rav Mana's statement. He said, what are we saying? That if they divided up the animals, they didn't divide up the rest of the Nechosim. So now we're saying that, and vice versa, we're saying if they didn't divide up, so we said if the animals are the roiv, then we're saying we're going according to the roiv, and if they didn't split up the animals yet, they're still running them as the estate of their father. They didn't split them up. Then we say that they're chayev and mais behema. So Rav Shammai says, in that case, what's the logic? Just because you're considering them one person as far as Maisa Behema. But the fact is, the Matzah Shekel, they're not necessarily giving from the Yerusha they got from their father. So why should we say that they're potter from Kolbein? Amalei, Rav Mana answered Rav Shammai, Don't you see that there's a difference? The difference is that they didn't divide it up. Therefore, when they're giving one full sella, which is two machzor shekels for the two of them, the fact is it's not considered that they're lending each other money. It's like they're giving each other a gift. And we learned in the Mishnah that if you give somebody as a machzor shekel, like all the gifts that they can give it, then you're potter from kolbein on that. So the same way here, it's as if they're giving a gift to each other, and therefore they're potter from kolbein. Whereas if they had divided up the inheritance so that each one has their own money, and then they join back together, then we would say, yeah, but each one has their own individual ownership of half the property. That's how Tiklan Chadotin explains it. Korban Eda says a little differently. He says, even if they're not giving, even if the seller that they're giving is not from the actual money they inherited from their father, the fact of the matter is that they stand to inherit a seller or more than that. So therefore, we can consider that as if it's money that came from that inheritance, and as if they never divided it, which in fact they didn't, and therefore they can be potter from kolbein. Okay, so the Gemara says me'ata. Now, based on this logic, shouldn't we say after the chok of a chazur and a shtatu, then why are we making a distinction between whether they divided up the inheritance and then made a new partnership, or whether they kept it as one thing altogether? Shouldn't we say even if they divided up and then they made a new partnership, chayavin mamais v'hemo p'turim menakolbon, we should say, if we're saying the main point is that they're giving a whole seller between the two of them, then what's the difference? Why are we saying that if they made a partnership, then why are we saying that only if they made a partnership are they potter from kolbein? We should say either way. In other words, the Tiklan Chadotin says the question is, given that we're saying that they're giving one seller and therefore they're potter from kolbein, then that should apply regardless, even if they divided up the inheritance and then made a new partnership. And Korban Eda says the same thing. So then even if, no matter what, as long as they're giving one seller between the two of them, then it shouldn't matter whether they're giving it from Tfusas Abayis, from the undivided inheritance, or whether they divided it up and then they joined back together in a partnership. Why are we saying that? We said, though, that they're chayev and kolban and they're potter from maisi behema. So what's the logic? And the answer is, Rabba b'shem Rab Abba Omer Rav Huna. The answer is that Rabba, which is the Yerushalmi's way of saying Rab Abba, says in the name of Abba bar Rav Huna, you should realize it's not just a matter of Yerusha. It doesn't really matter how it is that they came to have this Yerusha. Ki shnei achen sheyoshua savien, ki shnei gisin sheyoshua chamihen. The same rules would apply whether you have two brothers who inherited from their father, or whether you have two brothers-in-law who inherited from their father-in-law. Which the scenario would be, in other words, let's say, so you had, a man had two daughters. Then he passed away. He had no sons, only had two daughters. So he passed away. His daughters inherit him, like Bnos Tzlafad. Then the daughters passed away, and their respective husbands inherited them. So nevertheless, the fact is, since they inherited, it's considered like Tfusas Abayis, it's considered like an undivided inheritance. And therefore, so even though in this case it's not a Yerusha Daraisa, because the Gemara actually discusses in Bava Basra whether the fact that a husband yarshins his wife is Daraisa or Dirabanan, there are opinions over there that it's only Dirabanan. All Gemara is going according to that. So even in this case where it's only a Yerusha Drabanan, and also while they were alive, their father-in-law never gave Machta Shekel on their behalf, unlike sons who inherit from their father, where when they were younger, the father may well have given Machta Shekel on their behalf. Nevertheless, we still say that it still has the same din. So therefore, yes, there is going to be, that we do focus on the fact that whether we have one undivided inheritance or whether they divided it up. In other words, the idea is, we would say like this. When they yashined it, as long as they didn't split it up, then we say, fine, that remains as a Yerusha, it still remains as if it was in the ownership of the original person who owned it. Whether it's a father or whether it's a father-in-law. But what we say is, in both cases, whether we're talking about a Yerusha Daraisa, or whether we're talking about in this case where it's a Yerusha Darabanan, and a double Yerusha at that, because it's from their father-in-law by way of their, and then to their wives and then to them, either way, once they divide it up, even if they make a partnership afterwards, they're not undoing the original division. What they're doing is they're creating a new entity. So therefore, as a new entity, it's going to have different. It's going to have different dinim. It's true. It's true. The Gemara is saying. Rabba is saying. If they had kept the inheritance undivided, then it would have one din. But you're asking, so you're asking why it is, Lamaisa, in the end, they're giving one sella between the two of them, so why in that, why if they rejoin together in a partnership, why are they chayev in a kolbon? Why don't we say it's as if they undid the division of the inheritance, and therefore it's now considered as if it's still their father's estate? And the answer is no, it doesn't work that way, no matter what. The same way as we would say with brothers-in-law inheriting from their father-in-law, or with sons-in-law inheriting from their father-in-law, we wouldn't say that this is considered that's still considered in his original possession if they split it up, because after all they didn't really stand in the first place to yarshin him, certainly not on a daraisa level in the first place. The same way, even when their sons inheriting from their father, we're also not going to say that if they decide to make a partnership, that they should be considered like they undid the division. It's still considered like they made the division. Each one now owns their own, including their own machzor shekel, and now they decided to make a partnership, and they're still each chayev in machzor shekel. Because now we say it's not as if they're lending each other, now it's as if each one is giving his own machzor shekel. So that's the answer. There are Mefarshim, actually, who learn that what Rabba is saying is not an answer to the previous question. And in fact, here in our Gemaras, we have it with two dots before it, which suggests that it's not really an answer to the question. If the Gemara had left the question open, why indeed should it be that if they made the partnership again, they should be chayev in Kolbein? And then as a separate thing, the Gemara mentions, by the way, you should know this din about Yerusha applies not only to sons who inherit their father, but also to sons-in-law who inherit from their father-in-law. Okay, so again, Lamastana, you have the bottom line is you have certain cases, as we said, where the Chayev and Kolbon and Potter from Maisa Behema, cases where it's the other way around, and Rabbi Yirmiyah points out that actually, depending if they only divided part of the property, then you can actually have cases where they're Chayev in both or Potter in both. Okay, the last question is about these kolbonis. La'echan hoyu ha-kolbonis neuflin. What did they do with these kolbonis? All of these ma or half a ma that we said in the Mishnah, the 1/24th, the 1/12th, the 1/24th of the machzor shekel that each person is giving as a surcharge. What did they do with those? So Reb Meir says they go to the same place as the machzor shekels do, because Reb Meir holds that the kolbon is daraisa. So therefore, whatever purpose the machzor shekel itself goes for, where it goes into the lishka, and eventually they take it out from there to buy the korbanos and so forth. The same thing would be with the kolbon. Rabbi Lazar says that they go to Nedava. They go for buying animals for korbanos for kaitz on mizbeach to bring on the mizbeach when no korbanos are otherwise being offered. Reb Shimon Shazuri says they would buy with it golden plates and use them to plate the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Ben Azar Emma Shulchanan Hayu Noitlo Noisim Vescharan. Ben Azar says they would pay them. They would use them to pay the money changers. So they would pay the money changers out of these kolbonos. The Yesh Omer, like Tzas Drachim, and Yesh Omer, a fifth opinion, is they would use them for the expenses of the trip, which means the Korban Eda says it means the trip, the bringing the Shkolim to Yerushalayim. It costs money to ship them to Yerushalayim, so they would use the Kolbonos to pay for that. Tiklin Chadatin gives that as a first explanation, and as a second explanation, he brings another one that the Shulchanim themselves, the money changers themselves, they're all over the country. They have to now travel to the Beis Mikdash to bring the Shkolim. So therefore, we pay them out of the Kolbonos. So the Rambam just writes, the Rambam writes that they put them in Lishka and then decide whatever they want to do with them. In other words, the Rambam is not really deciding among these different opinions. The Ravid argues over there and says, the Rambam says they use them for purposes of the Beis Mikdash. The Ravid says, I mean, you have over here in the Gemara, you have five different opinions, what they did. And the Kesef Mishnah says, right, that's what the Rambam means. He means because you have all these different opinions, he's not really being machriya, he's not deciding which one is correct. We're saying generically that the Gizborim will decide what they need to do with it. Okay. Or they could be used for any of these purposes, yeah. Okay. Hadron alach be'echabad. Perek be'echabad. Next. Perek Beis. Halacha Aleph, the Mishnah says, Mitzayfin Shkolim L'Darkonos, they are allowed to, when the people of a certain city, they gather together their Machzor Shekels, now they're getting ready to send them to Yerushalayim, they're allowed to exchange them for Darkonos, which is a type of gold coin. There's a psukim in Sefer Ezra that mention a coin called Darkamoin, so the Rivan says it might be the same thing. Whatever the case, the point is that a gold coin is worth much more than silver coins. Some of the Mefarshim say specifically that a Darkon is worth 2 Sloim, so in that case, 4 Machzor Shekels equals 1 Darkon. So they're allowed to do that with name Masri HaDerech because of the burden on the road, because otherwise a lot of Machzor Shekels are going to be very heavy to carry. So like this, they can exchange them for larger gold coins, and that way it'll be easier to bring them to the Beis HaMikdash. We'll see in the Gemara why we say Davka for gold coins. Why don't we say that we can exchange them for something more precious, like diamonds or something, and use that. Next, the Mishnah continues, Kishem Shoyu Shofris Bamikdash, just like there were Shofris, which means pushkas, in the Beis HaMikdash. So later on in the sixth parak of our Masechta, we're going to talk about that there were 13 pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash arranged in a circle. And they use them they're called shofaris because they're like a pushka, and like a shofar, they're narrow on the top and wide on the bottom. This way a person can't stick in their hand and take out money when they're not supposed to. So they had in the Beis HaMikdash, they had 13 of them. They were arranged in a circle. We're going to learn the details about it in the sixth and seventh parak of our Masechta. And they had them, each one is earmarked for different purposes in the Beis HaMikdash. But in particular, they had ones in the Beis HaMikdash. They had one that was labeled Tiklin Chadatin, which means new shkolim, which is the shkolim that a person is, the Machzor Shekel that a person is bringing this year. This is where are the Piddush that we have over here on the page of Gemara called Tiklin Chadatin, got his name from that expression. Another one next to it was called Tiklin Atikin, which means old shkolim, which means if a person didn't bring Machzor Shekel last year, then they can sort of make up for it now. They bring their Machzor Shekel and they put it in the Tiklin Atikin box. And then later on, what happens is, now that money is not going to be used to buy this year's korbanos, because this year's korbanos have to come from this year's Machzor Shekel, but they use it for other purposes. We're going to learn later in the parak, we learned briefly about it before, that they use eventually, once they have leftover money in the Lishka, they use it for things like repairing the walls of Yerushalayim and the towers of it, and things like that. So they could use these Tiklin HaTikin for that purpose. So they had shofaris, they had pushkas in the Beis HaMikdash for this purpose. So the same way they had kach hoyu shofaris for Medina, the same way they had shofaris, they had pushkas like that all over the country, or according to some of the Mefarshim, it means in Yerushalayim. They'd have these shofaris over there, so that, in other words, like this, everybody doesn't have to bring their Machzor Shekel all the way to the Beis HaMikdash. They can put it in their local shofar, and then it will be brought to Yerushalayim.
If they enforce people to give, how would they know if they put it into that one or not?
Well, I mean, I guess the local basin would be responsible for making sure that they did. I mean, it's not like, you know, it wasn't like nowadays people travel all the time. I mean, usually people stayed put in their city and they only traveled for special occasions, like to be Oyla L'Regel. But there's no Aliyah L'Regel during Adar, right? And by Rosh Chodesh Nissan, they have to be in already. So the local basin, or maybe the Shulchanos, the money changers, would be responsible to keep track of who gave and who didn't, and then be mamashkin in them if they didn't. But yeah, the point is that in the city itself, in each city, in each large city, you would have a shofar set up over there so that the person can go and put it in there. I guess, right, if we say, and the Rambam holds this way, for example, that the shochanos are the ones responsible for collecting it, then the shofar would be in the, would be behind the shochanis counter, and when a person gives him the Machzor Shekel, then he'd stick it in there. Okay. So I guess you're asking if a person were to put it in the shofar without the shulchani knowing. It's a good question. I guess maybe it would be like any other case of, dinim mominus, but they'd have to go to Beis Din, and then we'd have to find out whether in fact he gave it or not. I don't know.
Yeah, they'd probably put the shofar in front of the Beis Din. They wrote the name down, you gave.
That's what I'm thinking. They had the shofar either by the Beis Din or by the Shulchani, and by the money changer, and he would be responsible for noting who gave and who didn't. Yeah. Mishnah continues. Bnei ha'ir sheshochu es shikleihen. Suppose that people of a certain city sent their Machzor Shekels with a shliach to Yerushalayim, v'nignavu sha'avdu, and on the way they were stolen or they were lost. So now, So what happens? So now we're going to discuss in the Gemara the question about this being hektish, about that hektish may have special rules. But forgetting about the rules of hektish for the moment, we have to consider at this point when they got lost or stolen, or there's different opinions about that, doesn't mean when they actually got lost or stolen, or when we found out about it or whatever, who did they belong to? Now the thing is like this, the Gemara is going to explain that there's two different opinions that we have throughout our Masechta when they do the Trumas HaLishka. So what happens, eventually, we said, the Matzah Shekels come to Yerushalayim, they put them in a Lishka, they put them in a chamber in the Bismikdash, and then three times a year, the first one being Rosh Chodesh Nissan, they go and take out coins from there and bring them to the various vendors from whom they're buying animals and menachos and flour for menachos and so forth. There's two different opinions. When they do that Trumas HaLishka, are they having in mind money that's on the way there yet, or not? If we say that they are, then it means, in other words, that if they already took one Truma, then it means that they already had this money in mind. In effect, therefore, this money already belongs to Hektish. And if not, then it means that it still belongs to the people of the city, because it means that it doesn't yet belong to Hektish until it actually reaches the Lishka. So therefore, the Mishnah says, Im Nitruma HaTruma, if a Truma had already been taken from the Lishka, so Rosh Chodesh Nissan had already passed, Nishboin, like his barin, then these shluchim, when we make them swear, now the shliach being, we're going to discuss in the Mishnah whether we're talking about a shrei mechinam or a shrei mesachar, we're talking about a shrei mechinam. So a shrei mechinam, we know, is potter from almost everything. He's only chayev if he was pesheya. So like this, he's potter from gneva or aveda. So therefore, he has to swear that in fact it was stolen or it was lost. Who is he swearing to? We're saying he swears to the gizbar, because in effect that money is already considered to belong to Hektish, and therefore the gizbar him, or like the gizbar is the baldin, the gizbar is the one who's saying, you know what, you owe us that money, and if you want to be potter from having to pay for it, then you have to swear, like a shrei mechinam would. The imlav, if the truma had not been taken yet, then it's not considered to belong to Hektish yet, so it still belongs to the people of the city, nishboin levnei ha'ir, then they have to swear to the people of the city, because it's still considered to be their money. And the people of the city then are going to have to give other machzah shekel instead, because that first machzah shekel doesn't count because it was lost or stolen on the way. There are mefarshim who explain that the bnei ha'ir shekel tachtein actually would apply to both cases, that in either way, even if we say that it's considered to have been that it's considered to already be hektish and they have to swear to the gizbarim, even then the fact is their machzah shekel didn't reach Yerushalayim, and therefore they might have to give machzah shekel again. Different mefarshim talk about different possibilities with that. Anyway, Nimtzu, continues the Mishnah, what happens if eventually we find the money that was lost? Or the Ganovim return the money. So now what happens? We said the people of the city designated new Machzah Shekels, and we have the old ones. So what do we do with them? Elu ve'elu shkolim, both of them have the din of Machzah Shekel. We don't say that the second ones are considered Hektish Tos, and therefore they're not Kodesh, because the fact is it's not a Tos. The fact is, at the time, they were Chayev to bring that second set of Shkolim. Ve'en Olam lahem l'shana abba, but we don't say, now we don't, so we can't give, obviously, we can't give those Machzah Shekels twice this year, because Ha'osho lo yabeh v'adal lo yamet, everybody has to give exactly a Machzah Shekel, no more, no less. Well, besides the Kolbein, but we don't say, so they obviously can't be both Machzah Shekels for this year. We don't say, oh, well, good, it means that we gave in advance a Machzah Shekel for next year, therefore next year we're Potter. You can't do that because you can't pay next year's Choyv with this year's money. Every year you have your own Choyv of Machzah Shekel. So what we do with them, we'll see in the Gemara. So the Gemara starts by asking, why are we saying that you can only exchange the shkolim for darkonos, which is gold coins, the yasu oisin margolius? Why can't we instead exchange them for pearls or diamonds, which are, there you have, it's even more so. You can have one diamond or one pearl is worth a lot of machzah shekels, so this way you have a lot of value in a very small package, and it's even easier to bring it to your shalai. The answer is shematazel amargolius. The problem is that the price of pearls might go down. The nimsa hektish mafsid, and then hektish winds up losing out. So as opposed to if we, as opposed, now it's true that if we exchange them for gold coins, there is a little bit of a chance also, because in the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara at the beginning of the fourth parak of Matziah, parak Azav, talks about the idea that even among, first of all, there was the idea in Halacha, the value of coinage is always fixed. The value of other things fluctuates depending on that. In other words, like in modern terms, for example, we say, let's say, you know, 10 years ago, a loaf of bread was worth, would have cost $1.50. Nowadays, it costs $3, let's say. So that means we say there's been inflation. $1.50 buys money buys half of what it did 10 years ago or 20 years ago, let's say. So we say that what it means is that that money is worth less than it was before. In Halacha, we don't say that. In Halacha, we say what it is the money is worth the same amount as it was before. What we say is the price of the commodity, the price of the bread, has gone up. Now, the Gemara talks about in Bava Metzia that in a similar vein, when it comes to coins themselves, you have silver coins are the normal daily coins that people use on a day-to-day basis, and those are considered the standard of value. Gold coins are not used as often, so their value fluctuates relative to silver. So it is true that when you're exchanging silver coins for gold coins, there's a little bit of a chance that the price of gold may go down and then Hektish is going to lose out. But it's much less of a chance than with commodities, with things like pearls or diamonds or whatever, where there's a much greater chance that the value is going to fluctuate and is going to go down and then Hektish is going to lose out. So therefore, we don't want to allow that. And we have an example, Kahid Tanenan Taman, similar to the way we learn in a Mishnah, similar to the way we learn in a Mishnah in Masechta Bechoros. The Mishnah talks over there about Hektish and different kinds of things. V'cholon Niftin B'Kesef or V'Shava Kesef, all of them, including Hektish, including a Bechor, etc., they can all be redeemed with money or with Shava Kesef, with something that has monetary value. With the exception, the Mishnah says over there, you can't use land, you can't use avodim, and you can't use shtaris. Chutz mishkolim. Except for matzah shekel, you can't use shava kesef. You dafka have to use a matzah shekel. So the question is, ain poyd in bekelim. So why can't you be poyd with kelim? And the answer is, because the answer is, again, because the kalim may go down in value, and then a hektish loses out. So therefore, therefore, when it comes to Machzor Shekel over there, we're saying that you can't use kalim. So the same idea over here, uf hachanami, the same thing over here, shemek tazel amargolius, the price of pearls might go down, benimsa a hektish mafsid, and then hektish winds up losing out, because you bought one pearl. You bought one pearl for 100 master shekels, and now it's worth only 90 master shekels, and therefore Hektish is losing out 10. So you can't do that. With that said, there are mefarshim. I think Meiri learns this way, that the kind of kalim we're talking about are actually, let's say, for example, kalim that are that have very fancy designs, like you have. In other words, a regular keli has more or less a certain value over a certain short period of time. Let's say a certain keli, it's not going to be worth $5 today and $15 tomorrow. It's not going to fluctuate that much. But let's say, for example, you have a keli that its value is in the fact that it has a lot of decorations on it. So that, even in the short term, different experts are going to evaluate it differently. Some of them are going to like the designs more. Some of them are going to like it less, and everybody's going to price it differently. So that could be the kind of kalim that we're saying that even for Hektish and Pidyon HaBen and so forth, you can't use those because those are not considered to have any kind of particular value at all because their value fluctuates so much. But maybe for other purposes, we would be able to use regular kalim. Just we're saying for Master Shekel, we're even stricter because we don't want Hektish to lose out. Okay. The Mishnah says, the Gemara continues, Masnisa b'tiklin chabatin. Now, we said, the next thing we said in the Mishnah was we said that there were shofros in the other cities in Eretz Yisrael, not just, besides that there were in the Beis HaMikdash, there were also in the Medina and the other large cities. So we said shofros. Now again, in the Beis HaMikdash, among the 13 shofros were two that were marked for shkolim. One tiklin chabatin for this year's shkolim and one for tiklin atikin for somebody who didn't give matzah shekel last year and is making up for it now. So the Gemara says, masnisa b'tiklin chabatin. Our Mishnah is saying only that is saying that there were shofaris only for tikkun chagatin in the other cities, avo tikkun atikkun loy bada. But as far as tikkun atikkun, it's not so. If somebody didn't give matzah shekel last year, and they're making it up for it this year, there's no shofar in the other cities for that. They're going to have to bring it to, they're going to have to bring it to the Beis Hamikdash when they're oil the rekel. The Tony Kane, and in fact, we learn a brisa like that. Atikin b'mikdash ve'en atikin b'medina. The box for the pushka for tikkun atikin is only in the Beis Hamikdash. There's no such box in the Medina. Although, with that said, there is a different explanation. Meaning, the Rebbe Von gives a different explanation. He says this that we're saying that you can't exchange the shkolim for pearls or diamonds or other things like that, anything other than gold coins, that would only apply, he says, to tikkun chabatin, because those are going to be going for this year's korbanos, and we don't want that hekdesh is going to end up losing out. But the tikkun atikkun, anyway, we said, are not going for this year's korbanos. They're going for things like fixing the walls of Yerushalayim, so that we don't care that much if the price of the pearl goes down, and therefore hekdesh is going to be losing out. So therefore, the tikkun atikkun you could exchange for pearls, according to him. That's the distinction that the Gemara is making. Okay, next. The Mishnah had talked about the case where the people sent their matzah shekel and then it got lost or stolen on the way. So masnisen b'shrem echinam. So the Mishnah is only talking about a shrem echinam who is potter for gneva v'aveda. Avo b'shrem esacha loy v'dot. But it wouldn't apply to a shrem esacha, because a shrem esacha is not to talk about who he's swearing to. A shrem esacha is chayev on gneva v'aveda, so he has to pay, period. So there's no swearing to the gizbarim or to the people of the city. But on the other hand, Amar Rav Abba v'afilu tema b'shem esacher. No, Rav Abba says actually you could make our Mishnah work even regarding a shem esacher, because nignivu b'listin mizuyan. The word nignivu in our Mishnah can mean not that they were stolen by regular ganovim, which a shem esacher would be hired for, but rather where they were held up by armed bandits, which is oynes, and a shem esacher is potter from oynes. Avdu. And when we say they were lost, we don't mean they were lost as in, like, they fell off the back of the wagon or something. We mean, means the ship sank in the ocean, and that's also considered an oinus. So yes, you could have, even when we're talking about a shema sacher over here, we could say that they have to swear. In fact, actually, the Rambam has an interesting shit on it. The Rambam learns when we said in the Mishnah that the people of the city have to send new matzah shekels, that would only be, the Rambam learns, only if they sent it with a shrem echinam. Because that was kind of careless of them. Because after all, given that a shrem echinam is potter for almost anything that happens to it, then it's very careless of them. Something could happen, and the hekdesh winds up not having the money. Therefore, we're going to make them give new matzah shekels. But if they sent it with a shrem esacher, which means they did everything possible, they hired somebody to go and bring it for them, so then we're going to send, then the Rambam learns that we're going to potter them from bringing new matzah shekels. Because after all, then we can't be mechayev of them, because they did everything they could. So then if there was an oinus, then we can't be mechayev at them. Okay. The Gemara continues. Omer of Yusti Bereb Simen, Asiya, Commander Omer, Terminal Gavi Vala Osid Ligavis. Our Mishnah, when it says that if the Truma had already been taken from the Lishka, then we said the Shluchim have to swear to the Gizborim, that would only be Asiya, Commander Omer, Terminal Gavi Vala Osid Ligavis. That would only be, according to the opinion, that when they take out money from the Lishka, they also have in mind, Beis Din tells them to have in mind also the money that has, both the money that's already been collected and the money that's yet to even be collected and reach the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, in other words, so once the people collected their matzah shekel and gave it to the shliach, in effect, it's already considered in the Rishus of Hekdesh even before it actually reached Yerushalayim. Bram, but Commander Omer ain't Terman Loyala Givoy, Loyala Mamushkan, Vala Osa Ligovis. But if we say, according to the other opinion, that when they take the Master Shekel, they're only having in mind the ones that are actually there, not the ones that have been collected and are on their way, and not the ones that haven't been collected yet, Loy Bada, then what our Mishnah is saying would not apply, because then even if Nitrima Truma, the fact is this money is not in the Rishus of Hekdesh, in the Rishus of the Gizbar. So therefore the Shluchim would still have to swear to the people of the city, and the people of the city would have to send new matzah shekels, because we can't say that Hekdesh is considered to have that money at all. Okay. Now, we said Bnei Ha'ir Sheshocha was Shekleim. More on this topic of the Bnei Ha'ir who sent their Shekleim and they were lost or stolen on the way. So now we said, now in particular, we said, now the question we're going to focus on over here in this next sugya is, why are we saying that they're swearing at all? The Mishnah tells us, in Bava Metzia, that even now, normally you have when there's a case of Hilchos Toyin V'Nitan where Reuven claims that Shimon owes him money. So normally there are cases where Shimon has to swear, but when it's hektish, then you don't do that because the psukim about these things, the psukim about Shomerim, the psukim about Toyin V'Nitan mention Re'ehu, his colleague, meaning a fellow Yid, not hektish. So why are we saying in our Mishnah that they're swearing in connection with Hekdesh? Amar Rabbi Elazar, did Rav Shimon. So Rabbi Elazar says, our Mishnah must be only according to Rav Shimon. Did Rav Shimon, Omer? Rav Shimon says, it's true that this is Hekdesh, but Kodshim Shu Chayabach Riyusim Kinechasavein, he says that if you have Kodshim where you are responsible for repaying, if they get lost or stolen or whatever, then they're considered like your Nechasim. This is a concept that the Gemara talks about in a number of places in Shas called Dover HaGurim L'mamen K'mamen Domi. We had it actually a couple of times in Pesachim. One of them was in connection with chametz of a goy that's in your possession over Pesach, where if you have a chrayus over it, where if it gets lost or stolen or whatever, then you're going to have to repay the goy. Then according to Reb Shimon, it's considered your chametz and your oivan ba'yirah ba'yimotze. Another case was in the next parak of Pesachim over there in connection with in connection with Kodshim over there. Anyway, the point is Reb Shimon holds as a general rule that let's say, for example, Kodshim, like in this case, the Machzor Shekel, it's not yours anymore because it belongs to Hekdesh, but if you are going to have to repay Hekdesh, if it gets lost, as in this case, where we're saying that you, the people of the city, are going to have to give new Machzor Shekels, then it's considered to that extent your mamon, therefore there's a shvur to be done on it. So, whereas the Chachamim would disagree and say the fact is it's not yours, and so therefore it's considered like Hekdesh, and ein neshvorin alakdeshes. You don't make a shvor when it comes to things of Hekdesh. So, according to the Balazar, our Mishnah can only work according to Reb Shimon. On the other hand, Amar Reb Yechanan and Divrei Hakol. Reb Yechanan says, no, our Mishnah would be according to everybody. Mishum shvor is takana, because this is a takana that the Chachamim made. There should be a shvor over here, because we don't want people to be careless with watching over Hekdesh. The shliach is going to think, you know what, hey, I'm a shemachinam, I'm potter from Gneva Aveda, and this being Hekdesh, I'm not even going to have to swear, so he's going to get lax with his shmira, or shemesach, or similar idea as far as oidzim. So therefore, midrabanan, we're going to make him swear in order that they should be more careful. But not that daraisa they would have to. So the Gemara continues, Al Daita Dirab Yechanan. Fine, if we go according to Rabbi Yechanan's understanding that the Mishnah is talking only a Shvor Dirabanan, Nicha Nishvorim Lagizborim, then we can understand what the Mishnah is saying. The Mishnah is saying that if the Truma was already taken, so therefore this money belongs to Hekdesh already, then they swear to the Gizborim, because the Gizborim are the ones who are claiming it. Beim Lav Nishvorim Levneir, and if not, then they're swearing to the people of the city because the money is still there. It was Levneir Shekel Machayim Tachtehen, and the people of the city bring other machzor shekel in front of them. So we can understand all of that as mishum shvuas takana. All of that we're saying is because it's a takana derabanan, and therefore we have all these various shvuas. Ela Rabbi Elazar, according to Rabbi Elazar, how can we say that the whole Mishnah works according to Rabbi Shimon? Nishvoyim levnei ha'ir hadohi did Rabbi Shimon. Okay, this that we're saying that if the truma wasn't taken yet, the money still belongs to the people of the city, and they should have to swear to the people of the city. Fine, that works according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon would say that maybe we would consider the money to be hektish, but the people of the city still have a certain achrayus over it because they are responsible to bring new machzor shekels instead. But nishvoyim legizborim. But if we say if the truma was taken, they're swearing to the gizborim. According to that, gizborim maya v'detayu. Then why are we swearing to the gizborim? The gizborim are not chayiv in the achrayus of it. So they have no ownership of the money. So why should they be swearing to the gizborim? Even according to Reb Shimon, if it's considered already in the reshus of the gizborim, then a nishvoyin ala hekdesh. So nobody has a chrayus over it over here to say that we should say dover agurim l'mamon. So according to that, why would according to Reb Shimon, why would they be swearing to the gizborim? So in fact, the Gemara says, the Gemara gives a statement. According to Tikkun Chadatin, the Gemara has said, fine, we've schlogged up what Rabbi Elazar is saying, and the Gemara is giving a different explanation of what Nishboim L'Gizborim means. According to Karban Ha'eda, it's an actual answer. So, Nishboim L'Vneho Ir B'Maimad Gizborim. So the Gemara says, it means, when we say Nishborim LaGizborim, doesn't mean they actually swear to the Gizborim themselves. You're right, the Gizborim themselves are not the Bala Dinim here at all, therefore there's no reason to swear in their presence. It means we swear to the people of the city, B'mayma Gizborim, in the presence of the Gizborim. In order that we don't suspect them, because in other words, we don't want, people are going to think that maybe these shluchim took the money for themselves, so the shruah helps clear them of that suspicion. People may think that they were careless with it. So therefore we make them swear, the maimed gizborim, this way also the people of the city won't suspect them that they took the money for themselves. Like this, if they have to swear in the presence of the people of the city and the presence of the Gizbarim, then they're going to be embarrassed to swear falsely, and therefore therefore that'll clear them of suspicion in front of everybody. Inami deloy neshava who poshim, or that this way they don't have a reputation as being careless people because they are swearing to the people and in front of the Gizbarim, but not that they're actually swearing to the Gizbarim. Tikkun Chadatin actually takes out these couple of lines, the Nishboim Levneo Ibn Maimon Gizborim. He says there's a sugya. The Gemara in the Bavli discusses this in Bava Metzia, and the Gemara mentions this point over there. But in our Gemara over here, he says again, he learns that the Gemara has just schlugged up what Rabbi Elazar says, that our Mishnah is only appointed of Shimon, and the Gemara leaves it at that. And in fact, the Loshin in these two lines, this Gizborim Maya Vititayu and the Kehech B'Loy Lachshedinu, is really more Bavli Loshin. So it really is possible that somebody wrote it on the margin of their Gemara, like somebody wrote out this Yerushalmi, wrote on the margin of their Gemara what it says about this in that Gemara in Bava Metzia, and then somebody else accidentally put it in. Okay. Be that as it may, the Gemara continues. Now, what happens? Suppose that the people of the city say, you know what, forget about swearing. Now let's go back to, in other words, a coincidence of Yechanan that was saying there's no need minatoda to swear in this case. We're only making them swear derabanan. Now, we're still saying that there's a case where they swear to the people of the city. The fact that your master shekels didn't reach the Beis Mikdash is because of Gneva Vaveda, if they were Shomer Chinam, or because of Oynes, if they were Shomer Sachar. So we're swearing on that, and therefore we're potter. What if the people of the city say, you know what, forget it, we're not going to make you swear. We'll just give new master shekels and have done with it. Don't swear to us. Nevertheless, Afapisha Kiblu Bnei Ha'ir L'Shalim, even if the people of the city agree voluntarily that they're going to give their new master shekel, Still, the shliach has to swear, because the rule is ena hektish yotze b'loy shavua. We cannot allow hektish to go away without a shavua, because Rabbi Yochanan had said, "Anam Aleph, we don't want people to be careless with hektish," and that's how it is. The point is not the shavua is not just in order to make the people of the city feel better. It's also in order that the shluchim themselves should realize they have to be careful with hektish, and therefore we don't want to allow them to just get away without a shavua. So the Gemara points out, so the Gemara continues, okay, hifrish shiklei v'avad. Now what happens for an individual? Here we were talking about a city that sent their master shekel. What if you have an individual set aside his master shekel, and then it got lost? Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayev Achrius Adshim Zirana L'Gizbar. Rabbi Yochanan says he's going to be Chayev in the Achrius of it, meaning he's going to have to designate a new master shekel until he actually gives it to the Gizbar. Rav Shimon Lakish Omer, Hektish Bershus Agavai, B'chol Makom Shehu. Rav Lakish says, no, Hektish is considered to be in Hashem's possession wherever it is. And this is the concept the Gemara mentions in some places. The Bavli calls it Kol Hecha De Issa, wherever it is, they Gaza the Rachmana Issa, it's in Hashem's treasury, because the whole world belongs to Hashem, so therefore he's going to be Potter. The Mefarshim over here discuss the question, are we talking about before Nitrima HaTrumah? We're definitely talking about before Nitrima HaTrumah, maybe even La'acha Nitrima HaTrumah. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan would be saying that he's Chayev, and Rish Lakish would be saying that he's Potter. So the Gemara says, Masnisa Pliga Rav Shimon Lakish. Our Mishnah seems to contradict Rav Shimon Lakish, because the Mishnah says, Nishboin Levnei Ir, Because we said that if the money got lost on the way to Yerushalayim, then we said that the shluchim have to swear to the people of the city, and the people of the city have to give new machzor shekel. So we see, not like Rish Lakish, that they're potter, because wherever it is in the world, it's in Hashem's treasury. The answer is, the Gemara says, that's not a proof. Loi oidi mishum shvuas takana. Again, it's like we said before, the whole idea behind the shvua is because of the takana, because we don't want people to be careless with hektish. The same way, this that we say, that the people have to give new matzah shekel is also because of takana. So this way, the people will be careful to guard it. So when nitruma hatruma, so it's already in the reshus of the gizbar, then we're going to say that we're not masakin that they have to give new master shekel. Or according to the Rambam, the distinction is whether they gave it with a shrema chinam or a shrema sachar. But the bottom line is, there are going to be many cases where they have to give it, according to Rish Lakish, we're going to say they don't have to give it daraisa, they only have to give it dirabanan. The Tikkun Chadatin says a couple of nafkaminas on it would be that one is that if there's a shvur, then it would be only a shvur d'rabbanon, which is more lenient than a shvur d'oraisa. Another distinction would be that, let's say, that if the money was stolen, you don't pay kafel for it, because the midoraisa, it belongs to hekdesh already. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah that the people of the city have to give new machzor shekel, so now we have two sets of machzor shekel. What do we do with them? Tani, we learn in a b'raisa, harishonim noflin l'tiklan chadatin, v'ashnim noflin l'tiklan atikin. The first ones go to tiklan chadatin, to this year's machzor shekel. The second one goes to tiklan atikin, to the ones that are from last year, for people to make up who didn't give machzor shekel last year. So we also put the second set. Now, what's considered the first set? Eloheinu rishonim ve'elim ashnim. What's the definition of first versus second set? Reb Pinchas bei Reb Chiya or Chanina, Reb Pinchas the son of Reb Chiya or the son of Reb Chanina, Reb Abba Mori and Reb Abba Mori disagree on this. Chad Oma, one says Elu Sheshochu Bneha Yitchila, one says the first ones means the first batch of money that the people sent, and then the second one would be the second ones that they gathered after the first ones were stolen. The Chorona Oma, and the other one says Elu Sheyigu, the Yidei Gizborim Tchila, the ones that reached the Gizborim first are considered the first set. In other words, let's say, for example, we said if you found the money, the Ganovim returned it. So now we have both sets. So according to one of them, between the Pinchas and Reb Abba Mori, one of them says that whichever set reaches the Gizbarim first is the one that's considered the first set and goes to this year's Master Shekel, and the other one would go to Tiklan HaTikin. The Rambam leaves the question unresolved. He mentions in Hilchos Shkolim both opinions, which is a bit uncharacteristic for the Rambam. And maybe he holds that the rules of how we paskin, between Amoraim don't apply in the same way to the Yerushalmi as they do to the Bavli. I don't know. Okay. Mishnah says, Halacha Beis, Hanosin Shikla L'Chaveri Lishkol Al-Yodah, if one person gives his Machzor Shekel to somebody else to give for him, so Reuven gives Shimon the Machzor Shekel and tells him, take it over to the money changers and give it on my, Reuven's, behalf, V'Shokla Yodah Atzma, and instead Shimon went and gave it for himself. So Im Nitruma Truma, if before he had given that Machzor Shekel, the Truma had already been taken, Moal, then Shimon has committed Me'ilah. Because again, once the truma was already taken, again, we said on Omer Aleph that there's an opinion, and our Mishnah is going according to this, that when they take the truma salishka, they have in mind the money that's yet to come to the Bais Mikdash in the future. So what happens is, so this money was already in the Rishus of Hekdesh, and then when he gave it for himself, then he had Hana from Hekdesh. We'll see in the Gemara what the Hana was, but in any case, therefore he committed Me'ilah. Another case, a shekel shiklei min a hektish. If a person takes money that was actually hektish, and he had money of hektish in his possession, and he took a machzor shekel from that and gave it as his own machzor shekel, so similar idea. If by that time the truma had already been taken from the lishka, the korva habehema, and at least one animal had already been bought with that truma and brought as a korban, mal, then at that point the person has committed. Then at that point the person has committed meila, but not before that, because meila is only when you take something out from hektish to cholin. Here he took it out from one kind of hektish to another. So therefore you need that something was actually done with it, namely that an animal was bought and offered as a korban. So the Tikkun Chadatin brings from the Vilna Gaon that the distinction is because before we're talking about there's no pagam in it. The original idea was that the machzor shekel was supposed to go to the gizbar, and it went to the gizbar, it just went for the wrong person. So therefore, so the Me'ilah only takes place the Me'ilah takes place as soon as Nitzar Ma'atzrima, even before an animal was brought and offered on the Mizbeach from it. But over here, we're talking about the Me'ilah involves something where there was a pagam, because you're taking the money, and originally it was supposed to go for Bedek Abayis, like any other Hekdesh, and now instead it's going for Karbonus. So therefore, so Me'ilah only takes place when a pagam was done, only when the money was actually, so to speak, damaged, in this case, by the animal being offered on the Mizbeach, where instead that money should have gone for Bedek Abayis. That's how Tiklun Chadatin learns. On the other hand, some of the other Mephoshim say that, no, when we say over here, with Korva Behema, would apply the same thing in the Reisha of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is just mentioning it in the Sefer, but it means it applies to the Reisha as well. Okay. Another case, Maisa Sheni would make Shvius. What if a person used Maisa Sheni money, or he used Shvius money, money that he had gotten from selling fruit of Shemitah, and he used that for his Machta Shekel? Yericho Kenegdon, so he should eat an equivalent amount of Maisa Sheni, or an equivalent amount of Shemitah fruit, it corresponding to that, and we'll see in the Gemara what that means. So the Gemara says,
when you mentioned that if it took a behemoth for that money, you don't know which money is being used by behemoths. It's just a bunch
that's
of coins
true,
together.
That's true, but once the trimmer was taken, if even one animal was brought, all the Jewish people, everybody who brought Master Shekel has a share in that animal. So therefore, the person who now did this, who gave somebody else's Master Shekel for himself, or who took Hekdesh money and used it for Master Shekel, at that point is when he's committed Me'ilah, because at that point now there's money that was supposed to go to Hekdesh and instead went towards the bringing of the sand. So that's the point. So it doesn't matter whether we know. Well, that's actually, the Gemara is going to discuss soon. The Gemara is going to discuss actually in a minute. Why do we say that? How do we know that his Machzor Shekel was actually one of the ones used to buy that animal? We'll get back to that point in a minute in the Gemara. So the Gemara says a Shekel Chula. Now, so we said the case was where a person takes money of Hekdesh and uses it for his Machzor Shekel. So Anan Tanenin in Korva Behema. Now we learn in our version of the Mishnah says that if an animal was bought with the money and then actually offered on the Mizbeach, then that's when he's committed Me'ilah. But Tony Dvei Rebbe in Nitzur Mahatruma. And then now on the other hand, in the Yeshiva of Rebbe, they had a different version of the Mishnah. It's interesting, even though Rebbe himself wrote the Mishnah, here we have it. Rebbe's Yeshiva had a different version of the Mishnah than we do. That the version was Im Nitzur Mahatruma. If the truma was taken, so the nusach acher over here and in parenthesis, but the version outside parenthesis is better to understand. The other one in the parenthesis is not so easy. So man tana im nitrima truma. Now, so which Tana would that be that would say that even in the Reisha we're talking about only the truma was given and an animal wasn't even brought from it yet. So that already he would have committed Me'ilah. So why should that be? If the Truma was taken yet, but no animal was brought from it yet, then why should we say that he committed Me'ilah already? L'chora, we're talking about the Reisha of the Mishnah, where a person is, where Reuben gave Shimon his Machzor Shekel to give, and instead Shimon gave it on behalf of himself. So we're saying as soon as the Truma was brought, then we're saying that already he committed Me'ilah, but man tana im nitrima truma. Which tana would say that would say that as soon as the truma was taken already, then that's enough for him to have committed Me'ilah, even before the money was used to bring any animals on the Mizbeach. So the answer is Reb Shimon. That would be according to Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon says later on in Or Masechta. Now you have like this. Again, the Gizborim take the money from the Truma Salishka and they use it to buy animals and they use it to buy flour from Anachos and so forth. Inevitably, when you buy things for Korbanos, some of them get spoiled. Some animals develop mumim, some flour spoils, etc., etc. So the Mishnah says over there that according to the Chachamim, we say that the money is not considered to belong to the vendor until the actual thing that they bought from him has actually been offered on the Mizbeach, and that it was a kosher carbon. Until then, the money is still considered to be in the possession of Hekdesh. So in other words, the Gizbo will go to a vendor. He'll say, I want to buy from you an animal. Here's the money. However, the money is not yet going to be considered yours until the animal is actually offered on the Mizbeach a few days from now. Whereas Reb Shimon says, Reb Shimon, Da'amar Reb Shimon, Miyad Hoy Makabal Moy. So Reb Shimon says, no, the vendor gets his money right away, and it's considered his money. Because the Koyanim are Zoris, and we can expect that they're going to be able to, that they're going to be able to bring the animals or the flour or whatever fast enough before they become possible. So therefore, so the point is that, that even if animals were not yet brought as a korban, just the fact that they bought the animal already, the money became cholin, and therefore, so now me'ila has been committed, because now you have the person used hektish money to, or somebody else's master shekel for himself. So as soon as it was used, as soon as nitrima truma, and right away they took that money and brought it to the vendor, according to the shimon, right at that point that money becomes cholin. Whereas according to the chachamim, the money is only going to become cholin only a few days later when they're actually makriv with the animal or the flour or whatever. Okay, so now the Gemara continues. The Kasha. Now we have a question on the Reisha of the Mishnah, where we're saying that if Shimon gives Reuven's master shekel as his own, then he committed Me'ila. Why is that? Suppose that Shimon steals Reuven's oila and brings it stam without specifying whether it's for himself or for Reuven. Wouldn't it be that by default it's mechaper for the original owner? So by default it's mechaper for Reuven. So the same way over here, Shimon gave the master shekel, claiming that it was his own. Really, it's Reuven's. So it is in fact on behalf of Reuven. How is Shimon committing Me'ila? So it'll count for Reuven's after all. The answer is Amar Rav Yudan Tifter B'Mesuyam. The answer is that we can say that our Mishnah is talking about where we can distinguish, where we can notice, we're able to definitively say that this particular coin is noticeable, that it belongs to this person, that it belongs to Shimon. So therefore, it looks like therefore it's considered as if it was Shimon's. So the Korban Eder explains that that's what it means. In other words, where Shimon actually brought it in to the Lishka, as we're going to say in a second, and therefore, so then it looks like it's actually his. It looks like it's actually Shimon's. The Chikon Chazatin says differently. He says that he gave it Mesuyam Beniskaven Litrim L'Shamayim. He intended to give it directly for the purpose of the Karbonis. And that would be Michel based Rabban Gamliel, namely if he acted like the people of Rabban Gamliel's household. We're going to learn in a few days that in Rabban Gamliel's family, they wanted to make sure that their master shekels are used for their actual coins are used for buying the Karbonis, not just that they might end up in Shiore HaLishka, in the leftover money in the Lishka, and that's going to be used to fix the walls of Yerushalayim and whatever. So therefore, they would go into the Lishka. And actually, they would give them permission to go into the Lishka and actually throw their coin onto the pile and show him a scaven with the Sechakopa. The person who's collecting the money out of the Lishka would deliberately make sure that coin winds up in the basket that he's taking out of there, in the box or the basket that he's taking out of there to buy the Karbonis. So now, let's say, so if a person does that, then we know that it actually went towards buying the Karbonis. So the question is, but still, how do we know maybe it wound up in the Shirayim, and Me'ila doesn't apply to Shirayim? Is there Me'ila in the Shirayim? After all, the Shirayim only go to the walls of Yerushalayim and so forth. So even if they actually went in, like Rabban Gamliel's family, and put it in there, still, maybe no actual animals were bought with that money. Maybe it was left over and became Shorei HaLishka. So still, how can you be Mechayev in a Korban Me'ila for sure? Because even if he acted like Rabban Gamliel and the money was placed directly in the basket, not necessarily is every single coin in that basket used that day to buy Korbanos. So how do you know still? Ella could have mayor. So no, the answer is rather we have to answer like Reb Meir. Did Reb Meir omer moilin the Shirayim? Reb Meir says that in fact Me'ila would apply to the Shirayim as well. So our mission would be like Reb Meir. Another possibility is that, again, it's talking about where the people, like the way that the people of Ram Gamliel's family did. So we said already that if they act like that, that. So now we know for a fact the Hashem is scouting Torah Lishmoy, so they actually have in mind to bring it on his behalf. So therefore, it's Davka on his behalf, and we know therefore it's designated as Shimon's Machzor Shekel, and it actually winds up in the So again, one way of understanding the Gemara is that not only we know that we know that it's Shimon's, and therefore Shimon is chayav from Eila. The other way of understanding is we're saying, again, we know that it winds up in the basket that's used to buy the korbanos, and now we're saying the pashtus, all the money in that basket is used to buy korbanos. Therefore, that's reason enough for him to have committed ne'ilah, even if we don't, because we can be pretty certain that it is used for that purpose. We're certain enough that he can bring a korban ne'ilah. That he'd be required to bring a korban me'ilah for it. Again, we said maybe only a coincidence of Shimon, because a coincidence of Chachamim, you'd have to wait until the actual animal was brought as a korban in order for him to be chayav for me'ilah. Okay. The question is, we said in the Mishnah that we're assuming he had hanah, because he can't be chayav for me'ilah unless he had hanah. So man, man, what was the hanah? Amr Rab Oven, the Shem Rabbanan to Taman, Rab Oven says in the name of the Rabbanan of over there in Yerushalmi terminology means Babel, so in the name of the Chachamim of Babel, he says the reason in the Kivin Shabastin Ru'in Lamashkin Vele Mishkinu. After all, if Shimon hadn't brought his master shekel, then we said previously that in the previous perek that Beis Din would take a mashkin from him. Now, like this, they think that Shimon gave it on his own behalf. Therefore, they didn't commotion nana, so that's considered a hanah. Therefore, that's enough of a hanah for him to be chayav a korban meal. Okay, we said ma'isa sheni v'chola. We said if he used ma'isa sheni money. Or shmita money. So then we said yoichok nevgan. So the Gemara says dichtiv. Now the pasuk says about bechur and about ma'aser sheni. Ach bechur asher yivuka l'Hashem bebehema. However, a bechur that was born first among the animals belongs to Hashem. Lo yachdish ish oisei. No person can declare it kodesh. In other words, you can't change it to a different kind of kedusha. From that we learn kol shu kodesh. Anything which has kedusha ain't kedusha chala olav. Some other kedusha cannot be chal on it. So when a person takes ma'aser sheni money, then what do we mean? It becomes ma'aser sheni, and yoichol kenegdon. He just has to take a different machzor shekel and eat it, and it's ma'aser sheni. B'chura, this coin b'chlal did not become machzor shekel. How do we fix up that? So that it should be able to be machzor shekel, and they can actually like this. It's mixed up among thousands of other coins. How are they going to be able to tell? So Kate said, "Who are you?" So what do you do in order to fix up the situation? Maybe sella shel chulin. You take a sella of regular chulin money, but oimer, and you say, "Moris ma'aser sheni, b'chamakom shehein." The money of ma'aser sheni, wherever it is, you mechulal, and our sella zu should be mechulal. The kedusha of it should be transferred onto the sella. But oisa sella nitpas l'shem ma'aser sheni. That sella now becomes ma'aser sheni. Vashtam, now it's a shkolim, and then the original coin is able to become shkolim. Because in other words, yeah, if you didn't do that, then yeah, you have somewhere mixed in among all the ma'aser shekels is one of ma'aser sheni, and that doesn't work. So therefore, we have to be mechalal it in order that now that one is going to be able, now the kedusha of ma'aser sheni goes away from it. Now the kedusha of ma'aser shekel is able to be chal on it, and it becomes like any other ma'aser shekel.